We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs, and welcome to the 100 Sanford Podcast. It is your guy, Lamar Lovelace. I am here with the incredible George Foster. We got Graham Coffee getting ready to come on soon. Hopefully. I know everybody's busy right now with all the big-time news that has gone out over college football. I'm sure everybody is aware of it. But before we get started and start talking about that in detail, look, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. There is more stuff coming down the pipe right now from 100 Sanford Podcast than you could ever dream of or know, but we are about to explode. So make sure you are notified of all the new shows that come out. Make sure you are notified of any updates and live pop-ups that we may do. Big G, what's going on, man? We got some big news to talk about today. Mm-hmm. What's going on, partner?
Hey, man. the landscape of college football has changed over the last 24 hours.
Drastically.
The giant in all of college football has decided to hang up the cleats, or to hang up his headset, so to speak, you know, and take it home. You know, he got nice homes, little toys here and there. You know, he about to go chill out, man. Nick Saban has decided to retire, and there's a million and one, you know, opinions about, you know, the time and who's taking over next and what's next for college football and how this affects Georgia in the time being. Let's talk about it.
Man, you ain't lying. I mean, in the last 24 hours, I wouldn't even say 24 hours because it's been less than that.
Yeah.
The internet has exploded. Mm-hmm. I've gotten more texts, more requests, more questions, more everything to talk about Nick Saban and how this impacts college football, how it impacts the SEC, how it impacts Georgia. First, you got to give credit where credit's due. You got to give credit to the guy, the man, not the myth. He is a legend. It is Nick Saban. I call him Big Nick, Big Stick Nick. That's what I call him, Big Stick Nick. Seven national championships, six at Alabama, obviously, one at LSU. The man has compiled an outrageous record. And his coaching tree, everything that has derived from Nick Saban has been successful for the most part. Coaches have gone on and made millions of dollars themselves, built great programs. One being the University of Georgia with Kirby Smart, obviously Dabo Sweeney over there. Clemson has done great things as well. But Nick needs to be, he needs to be celebrated first before anything, before anybody throws dirt on him in Alabama. The dude needs to be celebrated. One of the best coaches that have ever done it. And whether you like Nick or not, whether you like Alabama or not, you got to respect what this man has brought to college football and what he's brought primarily, quite honestly, even to the SEC, which has always been the dominant conference. We know that. It's been a dominant conference for a long, long time. Obviously, Florida's had its time. Georgia's had its time. Alabama's had its time. But when you look at the last 20 years, when you look at his reign in the SEC at Alabama, the notoriety, the presence, the visibility that he's brought to the conference has been outstanding. But you got to give him praise first, man, before anything else. What do you have any interaction that you've ever had with Nick yourself, or any stories that you've ever heard?
No interactions that I can remember. But what I can say is that the man is football God. You know what I mean? Like, people, especially in that state of Alabama, You know, in my time as a NFL scout, of course, we'd go down to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl every year. And in those, for those that don't know, and during the Senior Bowl, I don't know if they still do it. I haven't been a scout for a few years now. There's always a practice at Fairhope, Alabama. And in Fairhope, it's at a high school. And it's just one practice, and it's both teams, the North and the South, and the community that can come watch. And Nick Saban always makes an appearance. And when I tell you, when he shows up, it's like what you was imagining when Jesus was walking the streets and we coming to town. It's like when people wanting to see him and shake his hand and it's like just to see what the legend is about. It's almost right, like you wanna see him. It's like you wanna touch him. That's how the people treated him. You know, mm-hmm. So he earned all of that. You know, the thing about Nick Saban, man, is this whole time he's been a thorn in our side at Georgia, mm-hmm. For most of his years. But the man himself, just I don't know him, but just from what I've seen him speak on and clips and media clips I never disliked the guy. You know, he seemed like, you know, straight shooter. Mm-hmm. You know, now maybe there'll be some players and maybe some coaches, assistant coaches, disagree, you know, because I hear the ship is run a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it is very, very difficult to work for, you know, mm-hmm. from what I hear. But, you know, from the outside looking in, man. Nothing but respect from me to him and what he's accomplished over the years in football. You know what I mean? So salute to Nick Saban on a tremendous career. We'll see what's next for Alabama.
Yeah, man. I mean, like you, I've never heard anything overtly negative about him. He's intense. He's dedicated. He's structured, and when you look at this day and age, that can rub people the wrong way. And one thing I've always respected about Nick is that no matter where he went, that was his style. He could come off surly, but when you talk to his players, they were like, "Nah, that's not Nick at all." Outside of what you see in the media, he's more of Papa Bear. You know what I'm saying? He's that disciplinarian. He's that guy that wants you to be better than you could ever dream about, regardless of what the media is trying to portray and how others are trying to portray him to be this egotistical guy that's just out there for championships himself. You don't hear that necessarily from his players. Now, obviously, there's going to be your slight few. Man, I was cut. I was processed out of the program. You're going to have those guys that are always going to have their negative interactions with anybody in general in life. But for the most part, it's always been positive. And one thing about it is that you know it's positive when it's a difficult place to work, but yet coaches still come back and work underneath him. If they're still looking for a job and they're trying to rehash themselves and trying to recalibrate things, so to speak, who do they go to? They go to Nick. They don't try to knock on the door of somebody else. They go back to the house that built them to say, "Hey, build me back up again," so they can go back out and make big things happen for their own personal careers. And I've always appreciated from him is that he opens that door for them, whether they have issues, whether there's concerns, whether there's outside concerns and voices from media members and other schools. He's like, "No, this is home." And I've always appreciated that. And I've appreciated it more having seen what Kirby has built at Georgia, because when you hear the comparison between the two programs, it's very similar. The individual leading it may be different, but the way things are done in terms of a culture being built that this is home, this is family, this is what we do, it's very similar. So you can appreciate that. You can appreciate the tree, the lineage tree that Nick has built, obviously and gone on and passed it on to different people, including our own very own Kirby Smart. But it leads me to this. Why do you think Nick, at age 72, coming off of, you know, a college football playoff appearance, has decided to leave now? Some people speculate age. Some people speculate health. What are your personal thoughts? I mean, obviously, you don't have any inside intel, but what are your personal thoughts on why he would use now to exit college football?
That's a good question. He's in a position to say, why not? You know what I mean? It could be when you take his age, when you take his accomplishments, and when you take how college football itself has changed, you know, it can be a number of things. And until we hear from him, you know, I haven't seen the press conference or anything. He can craft it however he wants to. And then there's just be what we have to live with his reasoning. You know, I know a popular, you know, assumption, and it's not far-fetched, would have to be that, you know, college football has changed lately. And of course you have to adapt, but it's drastically changed, you know. And so for someone that's like deep into the head, I'm used to old school. You know, the football that I came up under is old school, and I'm in my 40s, you know. So the football that he came up under is definitely old school, and it's not the same anymore. You know, it's recruiting year round. You have to recruit your kids you've already recruited for years to come to your program. You have to recruit them again to keep them in your program. And, you know, you have the, you know, name, image, and likeness stuff that has entered the fold. And so it's a very different game. And you have to be committed to play the game how it's being played now. And it's a very different game. It's kind of like, you know, if you're a coach that cussed everybody out in the 80s, well, these kids, you know, they're going to tell their mama, you know what I mean? And excuse me, now granted, there are plenty of ways to get your point across as a coach, you know, and I believe that, you know, you don't have to be physical. You don't have to be condescending. You don't have to be any of that, you know, but in fact, the matter is my era, my generation grew up a certain way and we just rocked with it. We ain't know no better. It is what it is. It's not like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be committed to change nowadays. And those that are committed to change and how you have to do things are going to be the ones that succeed. And, you know, just to veer left a little bit and talk about another program, the one that we talk about the most, University of Georgia football, they've handled it. You know, their leader, Mr. Kirby Smart, has handled it wonderfully. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's from the old school, a few years older than me. And but he knows how to handle these kids. And so it's working for him for the time being. You know what I mean? You never know what these coaches are thinking. You know, mm-hmm. I figured Nick would hang around some more. You know, there's always been retirement talk, you know, the last few years. But, you know, I figured with the class he recruited and he has what some people call the number one quarterback coming in to the program. A quarterback can juice your friends and juice your team up a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. you know, you yeah. can ride, you can, you know, we had a quarterback. We had a quarterback. He became our starter and our leader in a kind of an unconventional way, but he gave us two championships. Ain't but a handful, five, maybe six, you know, teams have done it. I don't know if they all had the same quarterback, you know, for two years in a row. So right. A quarterback can, you know, change some things. So I figured he'd hang around a little bit to see what he can do with this new iteration of his squad. And, you know, he hung up. Sometimes it's time.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's time. It's funny, man, because, you know, you see different stories coming out. You know, it, like I said, his health, maybe his wife's health, something like that. I'm leaning more towards he's tired. You know, just from the changes of college football, when you look at where it has gone over the last few years, teachers teach. Nick is a teacher. He's an instructor. He's the type of guy that gets out there. He still wants to show DBs how to do it, and that's fine. But when you got to go off the field and then you got to deal with recruiting, which is always part of the game. But Nick has always been the closer of lately anyway. You know, when everybody else is recruiting, but when Big Stick comes into your living room, you know it's time for business. So he's always been a closer as of lately. But when it comes down to, okay, I recruit A, so to speak, I get him to my program. Now he's getting NIL dollars. Now he's getting the opportunity to make money off of himself. And now I still have to deal with the portal. I still have to deal with recruiting that kid the next year. I have to deal with the nuances of having to, quote unquote, outbid for a particular player. Now, let's just be honest. Pay for play has always been there. It's just now it's just legalized, right? Now it's out there in the open.
I say all the time, NIL been here, you know.
It's been there.
Especially amongst the big dogs, yes. NIL been here. It's just you can do it legally now, and you can say, hey, we got that bag.
That's what's happening.
Like you can do it out in the open. But it's been here, and it's been deciding where kids go for decades.
All right. And I think the challenge for most college coaches now is that since it is open, now there's more players in the playing field, so to speak, of where that pay for play is actually coming from. Not only that, you have the portal, and it's so easy to jump into the portal. It's so easy to transfer. You have to continue to recruit the kids that are constantly on your roster right now. You don't even know what's going to happen from year one to year two. Kirby was on 92.9 this morning, and he was talking about, of course, Big Nick stepping down, but he was also talking about the difficulties of college football. And they were asking him what his conversation was with Nick before the SEC title game and things like that. But he had even made mention. He's like, look, I don't know if I'm going to be here as long as you've been doing it. And I've always had that perception. This new age of coaches is going to take somebody that is so dedicated, so dialed in, that has such a team around them that they're insulated enough to conserve their energy. For folks who don't realize, it's a 24/7, 365-day job being a professional coach, especially on the college level, because you're responsible for young men outside of your own personal household and your own family. It's constant, right? So it's already wearing you down. Now you're asking me to follow said kid around to make sure that he's going to be around. Constantly doing that, constantly trying to make someone happy, constantly trying to pacify somebody's feelings because they didn't start or didn't get enough time, that wears down a lot of guys. And I can perceive Nick being at the stage that he's at. 6 national titles, what is there left to do? What, for me to conquer the 12-team playoff? Now, maybe that's a motivating factor for some people to say, hey, I want to be one of the guys that have won a national title with this 12-team playoff. But for him, there's no need to do so. You've already seen him dominate college football. So it's going to be interesting even moving forward with other coaches, including our own our own Kirby Smart, as to say, how long will he be there? How long will he try to battle this atmosphere that we have now in college football unless some structural changes are made? Some foundational things are put in place by the NCAA, by College Football Playoff Committee, that just in general, in terms of how we put structure, put walls around this thing to make sure that, one, it's safe for the student athlete, right? Because it's really truly about them and them growing as young men and young ladies. On top of it, that it's structurally safe for the university, that it's structurally sound for the consumer, which is the fan, because last but not least, we're the ones watching this thing and we're saying, hey, you know what? I just want pageantry. I want to be able to cheer for my team. I want to be able to know who's there, who's not there. And we're the ones that really drive the financial engine of all of this, because you even had people talking about, hey, I'm going to boycott and not watch the national championship game because I don't like what's going on. I mean, come on, folks. Again, if you're that naive to believe that NIL wasn't around, that pay-for-play wasn't around, that guys weren't cheating on the sideline, weren't trying to grab signals, and all these things weren't happening, then you're very naive. Now, to the level that obviously Michigan and Stallions went, that's one thing, but I'm sure it's been done before. But still, come on, we gotta pull this thing together, and hopefully college football starts to form back into what a new age of college football and what it really should be.
Yeah, man. It's going to be interesting. We're at the beginning of it all. Yeah. The portal is what, 4 years old? Want some change? NILs.
Blame COVID.
Yeah. Right. A couple years old with NIL. It's going to change. It's changing the game, and it's going to continue to change the game. Maybe you don't see the 15, 25 year coach, you know, at your prestigious institutions. You know, it's going to be a sad day for me when Kirby decides to hang it up.
Facts. But,
he has young kids, wife, you know, the rest of his life that he, you know, wants to live. He could have a goal to, you know, try to lead an NFL franchise, you know, anybody that loves football like that, you know, might want to see, can he conquer that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't rule any of that out within the next, you know, handful of years to 10 years, who knows, you know, but this is where we're at with college football now. And we'll find out later if that led to the stepping down of one of the game's greats. We'll see. I don't know. I feel like any statement from him wouldn't be like that, because it sounds too much more like an excuse. Mm-hmm. And I don't fancy him as one for a lot of excuses, you know. Mm-hmm. So he might just leave it at it was time, but that'll leave it up to us to decide if that, as we say nowadays, if that's cap, you know, or not. You know what I mean? But we can guess. If I had to guess, it's a combination of a few things.
You know, and all
of which we've discussed.
And mind you, 72 years old is a nice life for a lot of people to have lived and done a lot of great things. And people are selfishly, Alabama fan and college football fans in general, are saying, man, no, keep going. Man, look, that man is 72 years old. Let that man chill, relax, enjoy his family, his grandchildren, mm-hmm. great-grandchildren. I think he probably has by now. Let him enjoy his life. And hey, I've actually enjoyed Nick when he's been on telecast and, you know, talked about, the playoff games and things like that. He's actually come off more personable. His commercials with Dion, all that kind of stuff has come off like a different personality.
He's a great football mind. And I've enjoyed what he's had to say about certain things about the game of football. And very smart guy. He said some things about the psychology of football, the psychology of, you know, handling these kids, you know, and he said some very poignant things over his time in front of a microphone. I could see him, you know, now granted, that's a job too. I don't know if he wants to work again, mm-hmm. you know, but I would look forward to at least, you know, something weekly, you know, that we can get from him. And we'll see. We'll see if that happens. Yeah. But like you said, 72. Listen, the fact of the matter is, is, you know, we don't like to think about it that much, but once you get to, let's say, your 40s, maybe some people are 50, depending on your genetics, there's more time behind you than ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're 70, it's factually proven that you have more time behind you than ahead of you. I don't care if you live to be 120. Mm-hmm. There's more time behind you than in front of you. So, you know, if somebody wants to take the rest of those years and live their best life, you know, salute to them.
Facts. Well, I guess the next question would be, where does Bama go? Everybody's talking about that because for the most part, they're saying, you know, ding dong, the witch is dead, so to speak. You know, Alabama is no longer the king of the West. They're thinking about LSU jumping up. They're thinking about Texas that's now joining the SEC, becoming that team. Obviously, the big dog is still in the East. And I think most people actually believe and understand that Georgia is that team in the SEC coming in preseason ranked next year already with the rankings. And I think the polls have officially come out, but I guess the betting odd is for Georgia to win the national championship next year. But where does Alabama go? I mean, people are talking about Dabo Swinney. They're talking about Lanning. They're talking about all these different coaches that have come from that coaching tree and actually come through Kirby Smart and others that they could be the next guy. I'll tell you right now, though, we got breaking news because and Lanning has decided that he's staying in Oregon so that you could cross his name off, which I think Georgia fans should be excited about because obviously Dan Lanning has a lot of relationship with Georgia coaches, Georgia assistants. That would be something where maybe he would be able to poach a few different assistants from Georgia and other places to actually join that staff. Schumann being one of those guys I think he has a relationship with, but he's off the list. So now where does Alabama go? And if you're Alabama and you're leading this coaching search, where would you go and how would you kind of reconstruct this thing? Because obviously nobody is going to step in his shoes, but somebody has to step in and actually lead this program.
That's a good question. I've never put a timer on a coaching search before. I can't think about how long it typically takes. But one thing to note is that the transfer portal for Alabama players has opened up for another 30 days. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, while you don't want to rush a coaching hire, but at the same time, you want to see what type of retention you can have with your current roster. And so that's probably affects the search as well. I don't know where you go. Lanning did what I thought he should do.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a really sweet spot. You know, he's got a competitive team. He's out there. He has that Nike war chest. you know, like he's not wanting for nothing out there. And he's learned how to recruit the South, recruit nationally, which is what Georgia does now, mm-hmm. what Bama does now. I felt like he should stay there. And, you know, and I'm glad he did that, you know, just for those kids' sake. You know, you never want to, you know, up and bounce on a kid. I know it happens, but like, especially kids you just told that, hey, let's build something together for at least this next season. You know what I mean? And just also, how do I say this? Just people that I have relationships with, you know, in the media space and different schools and he might like the Athens job better than you know the Tuscaloosa job.
Right.
Who knows right. when? Who knows when that comes open? It ain't no time soon.
Right.
We assume and we hope. But who's to say that, you know, Lanning doesn't get some type of extension that keeps him around and all of a sudden comes open, Athens comes open, and he can jump straight from there to Athens, you know, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, Athens is a wonderful place, proximity to a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of places that you know and love. So who even knows about that? So Lanning's off the board.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves, you know.
I mean, it's a host. I mean, Alabama's big enough. It can go anywhere it wants to go to try to pull anybody it wants to pull.
Where they want to. They can go.
Exactly.
Now, with the way, it'll take a big check to poach from the pro ranks. Big check. You know what I mean? Because with what all the coaches have to deal with now in college football. By the way, you get paid a whole lot of money to do it. Don't get it twisted. It's a lot to do, but $10 million or better to do it. Yeah, I think you can do it. I think you can do it. So, and I don't want to hear no sob story and wah-wah and crying all this stuff about what all you have to do for $10 million. You know, people do more for
less.
You're 9.995 less. You know, so I want to hear about that. But that is a point that you have to make when trying to recruit guys, you know, from a higher level. But yeah, like they have their pick. And, you know, I think anybody will want that, you know, that backing from boosters, anybody want that roster. Anybody would want that prestige that comes with it, and you know the check gonna clear, and you know, so man, it's whoever, man. It'd be interesting to see if they go with some usual suspects or just go completely off the grid, you know, and get something we don't know.
It's interesting that you say that, because first let me go back to Lanning. And this is just, you know, again, for the average casual fan, college football is different. You don't, you know, it's pay for play. It's legalized pay for play now. So with that being said, big money people have now come out the woodwork and they're supporting said university, and their collectives have gotten bigger. They're able to supply kids with things that they need to supply them with. And now some programs have jumped up in that upper echelon of being able to compete. And you don't need to go to an Alabama, a Michigan, a perceived blue blood to actually make things happen. You could be a Dan Lanning and stay at Oregon and build your program with that coffer of money, like you just mentioned at Nike or other programs that are going to support and actually step up to the plate and say, hey, we want to play in this era as well. So you don't necessarily have to be a big dog going to a school that is a quote unquote big dog. It doesn't have to be anymore.
12-team playoff.
What's that?
12-team playoff too. Like, More people have a chance.
There you go. So I actually put it where there's 12 teams that you could possibly go to that you can make a great living at. Your family is happy, and you don't have to deal with some of the pressures that are associated with other schools. Now, when it comes to an Alabama, what is interesting to me is that, you know, you have all the usual suspect names that are coming out. You got the Dan Lannings, you got the Dabo Sweeney's. Heck, you got Kirby Smart's name has been mentioned, and people say, hey, would Alabama go after Kirby Smart? Following Nick Saban is a difficult task. And let me remind people, yes, it's Alabama, and Alabama's got money. Alabama's got backing. But you know what? It's a big difference when you lose a guy that's been doing it for 25, 30, 40 years and knows what he's doing and built a program and established his culture. And now you step into his seat. It's not the same. Now it's you having to do this. Now it's you having to navigate the new era of college football. And you better know what you're doing getting into that seat, driving this particular high-priced machine. Like you mentioned, They have that 30-day window of the portal. Who's going to be on that roster? Obviously, you're not going to lose so much talent where you're not able to compete. But at the same time, you're going to have to refit. You're going to have to fill certain spots that you may lose. And you better get in there quick and be able to build relationships and make sure the kids understand that, hey, you know what? New sheriff in town, I'm going to pacify you right now because I have to pacify you before I start building my culture and what I want to do. Alabama's got to get a hold of this pretty quickly because it could actually spiral out of control at the same time. If you look at it, LSU was on the rise. We just talked about it. Texas is on the rise. Georgia, the number one recruiting class in the nation, and they are still doing what Kirby wants to do over there. And if there's any team that has really had their finger on the pulse, it's been Georgia for a long time. Kirby's been out operating with the auspices of this going on for the last 5-6 years. He's been scheduling Oklahoma's and Texas's and all these other schools, Florida State and Clemson to start off the season, things like that, to get his team ready for a 12-team playoff. So he's already been operating like this. Not every school has been doing that. So who are you going to bring in if you're Alabama to actually lead this type of program? I would think it either has to be a full-time veteran that knows what he's done, knows what he's doing, who has led a big-time program before and understands those pressures, or they go completely off the reservation and bring in a hot young guy, a hot name that's a big-time recruiter that kids can follow. It has to be one or the other, but it cannot be anybody in between just for the sake of them being a quote-unquote name out there that national media is actually infatuated with. That would be my perception.
Let me tell you a name that I saw come up the other day or yesterday, and this is interesting, but it's also, we have to guess that it would probably be unlikely. But I did get on the 100 Sanford Twitter account yesterday and start a spaces space, and we had some people come on and talk, and we all kind of agreed that Bama probably won't hire a black guy. Mm-hmm. But I tell you who I did see, don't know why, and that's Mike Locksley, who has SEC experience. He has experience at Bama, and he's a really good coach, and he's made Maryland competitive. Yeah. He would be a good guy to consider being the head coach at Alabama. We'll see how they go, but he has the experience. He's not an old fuddy-duddy, you know right. What I mean? It'd be interesting to see if he even gets, you know, an interview or whatnot.
That's an interesting name, Foss, because again, now we don't know how much time Alabama's administrators were given to understand that, hey, Nick was going to walk away. Heck, they could have known for the last 5 months that Nick was going to walk away.
That's also true.
Right. Yeah, that's also true. With that being the case, they may say, okay, this was our short list of guys, Dabo, Lanning, heck, Jimbo Fisher. I don't even know some of the other names that have been mentioned. That's our short list. But then they might have a list of people that they say, okay, hey, look, we need a stopgap guy. And if the guy hits a home run, great. But if he doesn't hit a home run, he doesn't cost us as much. We don't lose a lot of credibility with our fan base because he's been here before. A guy like Mike Locksley is makes sense in a lot of different ways because much like, and I hate to make this comparison, because it drives me crazy. When the Houston Texans in the National Football League were looking to make their transition from all the issues that they had going on in Houston, and they hired some guys that were basically scapegoats until they could really get things under control after losing Deshaun Watson and things like that. Now they made the hire, right? They got the hire of the guy that they wanted. They got the draft pick and the quarterback, C.J. Stroud. So now they're back to being stabilized. But people forget about, you know, heck, I don't even remember the brothers' names that were there. They were in and out so right. quick, man.
Right.
But they got that big Lovey check. And, right?
I forgot the other guy's name, but
he was the special teams coordinator.
Yeah.
And I ain't heard from him since. He took that check, Foss, and he ain't on the NFL roster at all. He's somewhere.
He had been coaching forever. and finally got a shot. Like, I understand. I get it. Go chill out. Drink a few Mai Tais. Play with your kids,
When you look at like a Mike Locksley, that might make sense. Not that he's not a good coach, because he is. He's a very good coach. He's turned Maryland into a very competitive program, where Maryland hasn't always been that type of football program. He's been able to recruit, you know, that D.C. area, that metro area very well. Heck, I'm located in Virginia. You always hear the Maryland name now. Kids going there, kids that are actually getting on that roster. But he's also a guy that's garnered respect all around college football, and being, again, underneath that coaching tree with Nick Saban, you would think he might be a guy that can go back in-house, take over, stabilize everything for the short term. And if he continues to ball out like Alabama's balling out, keeps them in the playoffs and things like that, heck, for them, it's a cheap hire, and it's a home run, right? It's going and getting a triple-A batter, and all of a sudden you bring him up to the ranks, and this dude's hitting home runs. You never thought he's going to lead you to a title. It could be that type of situation, but that's a great name that you pull up. I never expected that. I didn't know where you were going with a name that they were talking about on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that, you know, in a graphic yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the next question would be then is that, okay, so we don't know the hire as of right now, as of this recording. Obviously, like I said, Dan Lanning is no longer in the race. But how does this shape the SEC? How does this shape college football? And that's another thing that I looked at. I said, okay, with Alabama, quote unquote, no longer being, I guess, in the starting gates to start the season, because I think with Nick, you always got to put him in the starting gates as being one of those teams that it might finish up front. How does this shape the SEC now with Texas coming in, Oklahoma coming in, infiltrating some of that Alabama recruiting base as well? Do you think Alabama takes a step back at all?
It's going to depend on who they bring in for coach. Nobody's Nick Saban, you know, but at the same time, as much as he's won, he hasn't won all of them. You know what I mean? Right. So there are people that have beat him. I think Bama is still a major brand. And, you know, I think you get the right coach in there that can relate to these kids. You know what I'm saying? They might not miss a beat, you know, if they establish a culture there. There's a certain culture there with Alabama, and it's hard to explain, but it's there, and you know it, and you hear about it, and it's not one that every school can implore. You know, it's only a few. It's kind of like people talk about the quote Patriot way and all that stuff. I believe there was a Patriot way at some point. And nobody under that tree could duplicate it. Nowhere that they went.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's a culture there in Bama, and that, you know, somebody's gonna have to establish their own. But as far as getting guys, look at the facilities, the money, they got it all. So, you know, if you have to nail the coach. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can nail the coach, and I think you'll be, I think they'll be fine. You know, adding Oklahoma and Texas makes things interesting. I think they are what they are. You know, they have potential to be, you know, really good. Texas playoff team this year. You know, so the potential is there. Adding them into the fold for them to be good and for them to make some noise. Of course, Georgia is still king, you know, to everybody, to most people. There's a lot of ding dong, the witch is dead sentiment going around the fan base, you know, just because of the thorn they've been in our side, you know, but you still have to play. We got to play Texas. We still got to go to Tuscaloosa. I don't care who's coaching. Still got to go there, and they still got a top 5-4 roster, you know, unless there's a mass exodus, You still got to go play them. So, yeah, Georgia's still the top dog. But, you know, we got to play these games, man. And Bama's still going to be a premier program thanks to Nick Saban. You know, he built that up. It was not, you know, in the same way that, you know, Georgia was a really, really, really good program, you know, with the last regime. You know, they took it up a notch. You know, Alabama, they had some history with Bear Bryant. You know, and then later on, you know, Gene Stallings had some good teams. Brought a trophy to Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. They have history. But there was a stretch where it wasn't really good there. It was, you know, it was actually pretty bad in Bama, and Nick Saban took it to like a different stratosphere.
Yeah.
He just went bonkers, you know. So yeah, they have to do that, but they still have, you know, a solid foundation, and that's thanks to Nick.
Man, you know what? I'm gonna go a different route. I think that they still had that foundation. I think that they had everything in place that they could be successful and will continue to be successful to a certain extent. I think in the short term, until things kind of shake out, I think they take somewhat of a hit. You do have Oklahoma coming in who didn't, I mean, they had a great recruiting class by recruiting class standards across the nation. LSU was recruiting at a high clip. Texas is recruiting at a high clip. I don't even like to really mention Texas A&M. Everybody talks about them. Look, I'm just going to say this right now. That's one of the most overrated programs that there is in that particular region. And the reason is, I'm not saying that they don't have the abilities and the capabilities and the facilities to do great things. It's just that a lot of those kids that are at Texas, Oklahoma, LSU, and Bama, they're not going to Texas A&M, right? So it's almost like they've always been that kind of like that stepchild, so to speak, but they still pull their share. That's a lot of separation of talent just in the West itself, right? So if you don't nail that hire, you're going to lose a lot of talent. It's going to be spaced out because now the Texas kid that was going to Alabama, that was going to LSU, that was going to Georgia, that was going to some of these SEC schools, Ole Miss, they can stay at home now. They can say, hey, I can go up north to Oklahoma and I could still play in the greatest conference in college football, the SEC. So now some of that talent gets a little bit spaced out. And then on top of it, again, we're talking about NIL. That money gets pulled in different spots. I don't have to stay in the SEC. I can go to said school in the Big 10, ACC, and collect a big check, get big time numbers, and still go to the league or get my opportunity to go to the league. So that kind of spaces it out. I think that Alabama's in a very interesting position. And again, I think they need to take their time. I don't think they necessarily need to worry so much about this portal window of 30 days of making a quick hire. I think they need to take their time and make the correct hire, because the correct guy that comes in can stabilize the culture, can garner the respect of all those kids that are still in place, and be able to let them know that, look, it's going to take a year for us to kind of get our feet underneath us and keep this thing rolling, but rock with me. I got you. And they got to make that hire. It cannot be somebody that comes in that says, hey, Nick did it this way. This is my way. They're going to rub kids the wrong way. You're going to rub people the wrong way around the program. Get it right. But until then, I think it's going to be unstable for at least a year. We'll see how it shakes out after next year in terms of where Alabama's at. Heck, they may go 12-0 in the West. I don't know. They may go they might go 9-3 for all I'm concerned. But as you mentioned, Georgia, in my opinion, is still the top dog in the SEC, if not the entire nation. What they have built, they are the new foundation of college football and how things should be done in terms of culture, in terms of coaching, in terms of the way they interact with their players, how they've managed the portal, how they've managed NIL. All of those things, I think Georgia is the reigning king, so to speak, in college football. So we'll see. We'll see where Bama goes, and we'll see where the SEC goes with this, because Nick meant a lot to the SEC, whether you liked him or not, whether you were a fan of them being a thorn in Georgia's side or not, it still added a lot to the table. And which, man, I wish he would have done this before the SEC title game, man. I wish he just would have walked off into the sunset, let us get our three-peat, and, you know, and said, hey, son, you know, said to Kirby, like, hey, just go do your thing, man, because I think we definitely would have walked off this season as national champion. Looking at what happened in the playoffs, looking at how, and I was wrong, I'll say I was wrong. I thought Washington was going to go out there and boat race, just destroy Michigan. And Michigan came out there, man, with a lot of thunder, a lot of weight up front, and that offensive line, that defensive line showed out in a mighty way against Washington. So it goes to show you, you know, where they were in terms of a flash in the pan type team in Washington that was out there in the Pac-12. What are your thoughts on that national championship game, man? Because I know we talked about it briefly. What'd you think?
Yeah, man, Michigan went out there and played ball, man. For the most part, they out-physicaled Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different, man. Big boy football is different. Cool. And Michigan is known to play big boy football. At least they try to. Now, granted, they played Georgia a few years ago, and you saw that there's just a difference. You know, when you're talking about the cream of the crop in the SEC and Big Ten, but at the same time, Michigan is built a certain way, and they have a head coach that has won on every level. You know, it's fun to pick at Harbaugh and talk about him. He's a little weird and quirky.
His cold pants.
You know, it's fun, but the guy has won. Whether it's Stanford, the 49ers, you know, here at Michigan, you know, he's won. He's a really good coach, you know, that rubs some folks the wrong way. And, you know, they had their team prepared. You know, they're very physical. They, you know, Washington, for the most part, especially at the beginning, they couldn't stop the run. You know what I mean? They couldn't, you know, they tried to play it light. Then when they did bring down people, wrong fits, wrong gaps, wrong fits, bad technique. And that's what sprung a lot of the plays. You know what I mean? For the longest, that game was very boring. You know, nobody could get anything really going. I was like, that's really what got people talking. Like, yeah, Georgia should have been there. You know what I mean? Right. Even the non-Georgia fans, everybody, you know, was talking about that. But Michigan, you know, they handled business. You know what I mean? Washington came in with the high-flying offense. Listen, you better come in there with your big guns. You know, it's hard to toss that football around getting hit in the mouth. It's just hard. You know, you can do it for a while, but the goal is to do it for every game, 15 games. You know, yeah, you can go far, you know, but at the end of the day, we saw again what wins football. You know what I mean? The last 2 years, you know, I was looking at some James Cook highlights the other day. You know, he had runs that sealed the game in Indy. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, right.
You know, it's, you know, you had Zeus. You know what I mean? It was like that type of football matters in the end. You can finesse your way to the big shebang. You can finesse your way all the way to the natty, and then rent become due. And then you got to decide, do you have enough money to pay rent this game? You know what I mean? And Washington came up short. they didn't have their rent money.
Well, you know, it's funny, man, because again, I actually thought, I'm not a big fan of the Big Ten. I'm not a big fan of the style of ball, even though I grew up in that area. I think Ohio State should be much, much better year to year than what they are with the talent that they get, because they actually recruit very, very well on the outsides. But they also recruit well on the inside in those trenches, right? So why they are not as successful as they can be is beyond me. That's why I didn't really put too much respect on Michigan's name to start off with, because they don't recruit the skill positions as well as like an Ohio State does. Heck, they don't even recruit them as well as Penn State does, in my opinion. But when it came down to this game, they bullied Washington. We saw Washington play Texas. It was a game of skill positions, right? It was a game of the quarterback play, the play callers, the guys making big plays downfield. But like you mentioned, when it comes down to it, who's going to roll up their sleeves, put on their gloves, and go to work? And it was really Michigan in those trenches. They beat up Penix from the start of the game to the very end. I mean, heck, he walked off holding his ribs. So you already know what type of game that he had. And it kind of reminded me of, not that they're going to come back and do anything next year, because I think, again, if Georgia was in this national championship game, they would have handled business in a mighty way against Michigan. They would have been able to not just be as physical with them, but also skill-wise with the quarterback play, been much better than Michigan. But when it comes down to what they were able to do, they were able to bully Washington up front and then utilize just some big splash plays, because that's what it came down to, a lot of splash runs from Corum, from Edwards, and it reminded me of that Georgia 21 team where Stetson was the guy, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he stepped up as the guy, but he didn't really have to do everything, because Georgia had so much talent all over the field, and nobody was going to beat them. Nobody was going to deny them of the national championship that year. Not saying that Michigan's defense, folks, was anywhere near that 21 defense. That was phenomenal. But the leadership, the way they were playing together, the thought of them against the world, it seemed like the same type of game. But quite honestly, if they matched up with Georgia in that national championship game, I think Georgia would have ran them off the field. That's my personal opinion.
Michigan had 38 carries and 18 pass attempts.
Yes.
Listen, Washington only had 20 rushes. And that game was close for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was close until the fourth quarter.
They had 51 pass attempts. No matter what you say about this new age football and this, that, and the other, and it's wide open, we see what wins year after year. We see what wins. Few anomalies here and there, but we see what wins. When it comes down to it, when the coach decides to, let's kick it old school, and they decide to do that, and your team not built for that, your philosophy not built for that, we see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, that game ended 34-13. It was nowhere near that.
It was what, 20-13 going into the fourth quarter, right?
Majority of the game. And Michigan stuck with what they do. 18 pass attempts, dude. They threw for 140 yards.
Which is amazing, because they're still talking about McCarthy as a top prospect.
The QB didn't have NAM touchdown, but he also didn't have NAM interception.
Facts.
You can win like that. You can win like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the tail of the tape. That was the tail of the tape right there. 200-yard rushers. Listen, they ran for 8 yards a pop. That was total domination.
When they needed to.
And still was close in the end.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that it kind of reminds you of that Penn State game. I mean, obviously they didn't the results were a little bit different, and it was skewed to look a little bit different. It wasn't that big of a magnitude of a game. But when they ran the ball, what was it? 20 something odd times against Penn State, just straight down the throw. I mean, it was crazy how many times they ran the football in a row, but they did. They just dominated the trenches. But At the same time, like you mentioned, it was close. It was close for a long time, so it's not like they dominated too much, but when they wanted to take over, I guess they could. But kudos to them. I mean, I'm not going to crown them national champions. I'm going to put an asterisk next to their name. Stallions was out there in California. I don't know it what he what was going is. Out
you,
there.
You have, out you, have, there. You have to acknowledge it. You know what I mean? You have to acknowledge that, you know, that there was a cheating scandal and something might come out, you know, in the end. You have to acknowledge that. Yes, they won. You know, the Astros, they ain't got nothing to do with us. Like, you did what you did, you know, but you also did what you did, which is win every game. So two things can be true.
True. Mm-hmm. Well, man, you know, before we go, we got some other things. We got some guys that have actually come out of the portal. Well, they're not out of the portal. They've moved on. I think it's AJ Harris who's going to Penn State. Congratulations to him. There was somebody else, man, somebody else in the portal. Man.
We had somebody jump out the portal.
Who jumped out?
You remember Humphrey?
Oh yeah, that boy playing hopscotch. He don't know where he want to come. You know, whether he want to stay, go. Smart decision for him, by the way. I want to give him a shout out.
Yeah, I mean, right. Hey, listen, man. You got to look at your future, man. You're gonna win at Georgia, and you're gonna get the best tutelage, you know, as a defensive back that you can get. Facts. You know, at this point, I'm pretty sure there are plenty of coaches around the country, but you know, as a brand, you take your butt to play for Nick Saban or Kirby Smart if you playing in that secondary, and you're gonna be fine.
Yeah,
you're gonna be more than fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, again, I know why it irritates fans so much, because you're sitting there saying, okay, what do we have going into next year? Who's on that roster? Who's going to be the guy? You got, you know, Ellis Robinson IV, who's coming in. He's a freshman, folks. I know he's going to be dynamic. Don't get me wrong. That boy's going to be day one. He could start. But the way that Georgia plays their defense, a lot of guys see the field, and you don't have to be the guy to go on to the next level and be the guy. Scouts know. They know from the reps that you get. They know from the time that you're on the field if you're that guy. Look at Mims. Mims has 10 starts underneath his belt, if that, and now he's still being projected as a first-round pick, as a right tackle, left tackle, whatever it may be, on the next level. That's saying something. That's called development, and that's called being prepared at the right place at the right time.
I didn't have that many starts. I didn't have that many starts. Went all SEC. I wasn't All-American. I wasn't honorable mention. I was none of that. And, you know, I was blessed with some genetics. And I played hard and was blessed to be drafted in the first round. You can obtain all your goals. Just put your head down and work. The work. The work is like, you do the work and keep your nose clean. Keep your reputation clean. As a kid, you know what I mean? You'd be fine.
Mm-hmm. And Kirby mentioned that slightly too on 92.9 earlier today. He said, you know, kids are taking the short way out, you know, quick money. He understands it, but it's not always the best way to go. And some of these guys that actually jump in the portal to leave just for the quick money, don't make that mistake. I can understand you going back home. I mean, the kid's from Texas. He could have gone back to Texas like A.D. Mitchell, who obviously was going back for family reasons. He's got his daughter. He wanted to be close.
Hey, I understand. Kudos to that young AD, man. I hated to see him go. 100%. He left for a reason. He stood on his reason.
Facts.
There was nothing else said about it. Just like that. And he's shown throughout his tenure at Texas that his reason, you know. Mm-hmm. You tell you in a heartbeat, my kid is my reason.
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's right. He left a great thing at Georgia, but you know, kudos to him wanting to be a good dad. Like wanted to be like, that's a big deal. He wanted to be a good dad for his kid. And it takes presence, you know, to be to fulfill that potential. You know, it's not, it's not in the cards for some people. You know, distance is there sometimes, but he had an opportunity to control the distance between him and his kid, and he made a decision, and it worked out for him. Got to the playoffs again. He's going to be in the NFL, going to have a great NFL career, you know, going to make some good money, take care of his kid. You know, what else could you ask for?
And that's one of those situations where NIL works the way it's supposed to, where the portal works the way it's supposed to, where a guy or a young athlete, student athlete is able to relocate back to where they need to relocate back to for reasons that fit them. But I think what Kirby was talking about, obviously, today was that, you know, some of these things aren't about reasons. They're just about a financial reason. And if that's your reason, hey, stand on that as well. Don't get in that portal. Don't go places talking about, well, it's because of X, Y, and Z. Come on, man. Just say what the reasoning is. It's about the money. It's about the people. It's about, hey, I didn't think I was going to get that time. Just stand on that and then rock with it. I think most people, most fans that are in college football now can identify with truth via Cat Williams talking about, but don't want to deal with like the lies and the, you know, all the innuendos and all the other things that kind of go around it where people can actually stir up stories and things that aren't true. But I'm glad to see Humphrey back. I think he's going to be dynamic for us this year. He was starting to play that corner spot very, very well. They're going to get him a little bit more physical, but he's one of those kids that he can cover, and it's going to help this team out in a mighty way, mighty, mighty way. So I forgot that he jumped into the portal and jumped out. But with that being said, oh, I think I know what the last thing was, Foss. That basketball team, man. You on mute, brother. You on mute. 10 wins in a row.
I said they hooping.
They, yes.
It's hard to win 10 in a row.
Yes.
Mike White.
I don't care who you playing. I don't care if you playing, you know, children of the poor.
Yeah.
10 straight games. It's hard to win 10 in a row, especially when you're trying to rebuild your program up the way that he's trying to rebuild it. But big win for them.
10 wins in a row. Like, that's in college, that's a third of a season.
Yes.
That's a third of a season. So are we looking at, you know, field of 64?
Could be. 12-3. I think they probably need to get to about 19 wins. If you're Georgia in the SEC, you probably got to get to at least 19 wins, quality wins. You know, you got to have some quality wins underneath your belt. Arkansas was a quality win. They got Tennessee coming up on Saturday, I believe. Yeah, Tennessee comes into the house, number 5 ranked team. But you at least got to put something good on tape. Even if you don't come out of there with a victory, if they put some good work on tape, they're going to start to generate some more interest for the committee to put them in a field of 64, I guess 68 now, put them in that field. But Mike White got those boys balling. And you know what? Here's the other thing. You know what? If we kind of transition back to Nick and then kind of end the show, what Nick Saban meant for Alabama was way more than football. People forget how bad that basketball program was. People forget that nobody wanted to go to Tuscaloosa to go to school. Who really wants to go to Tuscaloosa? Heck, I'd rather go to Auburn. They got a nicer campus. But when they started winning, people want to be around winners. They had to open up schooling, online schooling, to handle all the, you know, the applications that people wanted to go to the school and everything else. So they got an online school and it started generating more dollars. The same thing is what Georgia is doing right now with Kirby Smart, that football program. It's generating more interest in people wanting to go to Athens. Other programs, more money being infused in other programs. And guess what? The more money comes in this pay-for-play era, other types of programs can redevelop themselves and build themselves up. And hopefully Mike White and the basketball program could take advantage of that as well. So kudos to Mike White and those boys. Like I said, 12-3, doing some good things in the SEC. Good luck this Saturday against Tennessee. Boss, anything else before we close out? And I think next week we're going to recap the 2024 season. But anything else before we close out today?
Nothing else, man. Peace. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs. Go Dawgs.
Loons. I see you got your tricks over there.
That wasn't me. That was you, bro.
What?
I thought you were saying it was your birthday and I missed it. Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford
Podcast. How did that happen?
Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.